Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Perkins Platform. This is a monthly solutions-oriented talk radio show. Each month, we dedicate about 30 minutes to explore contemporary issues and solutions in education leadership, and this is your host, Brian Perkins. This month, we have the founder of Believe Schools in Indianapolis, Indiana, Ms. Kimberly Neal. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you, Dr. Perkins. Honored to be here.
Thank you. And to our faithful listeners, welcome back. Thank you for being part of our family of over 5,000 listeners every month. And to our new listeners, we're glad you've joined us. And I'm really excited to have Kim with us this afternoon. Kim, as I mentioned in my introduction, is the founder of Believe Schools in Indianapolis, but she was also a managing director of secondary education at KIPP DC and has held a number of roles in education in places and urban centers around the country. And I invited Kim today because there's a significant number of the listeners out there that are either principals or aspiring principals. A lot of people are listening from our urban centers around the U.S., and Kim has done it and done it well in a number of urban areas, and especially the challenge of being a principal in these communities. I guess the first thing, Kim, I want you to tell us a little bit about is the new school that you have founded, a new network that will be Believe Schools. Tell us a little bit about your project in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. We'll launch next fall of 2020 with ninth grade only here in Indianapolis, and it's a college and career focused high school. The reason I'm excited about it is because it's a very different model than what I've been doing for the last 15 or so years. The model is going to focus on acceleration, autonomy, and agency with our students. So think the private school model where students are given a lot of freedom and autonomy and space to express themselves with the urban student, a traditionally underestimated student who's generally in a more disciplined and structured environment. I have to believe that our students are able to rise to whatever occasion is set in front of them, and I'm faithful that once we launch this new school with lots of autonomy for our students, that they're going to rise to the occasion and excel in this new environment.
So when you say autonomy, tell us a little bit, what does that look like, autonomy in the school? Describe that for us.
Yep. So our goal is that our students will not, over the 4 years, be subjected to rigid discipline policies. Our students will be expected to go out into the community and be actively involved and engaged in the community. Think on Friday afternoons, our students, instead of sitting in a classroom or in many of the cases that I've worked in, sitting in detention, they'll be out in the community volunteering or tutoring at a local elementary school. They may be taking a class at the local college or university, or they may be playing soccer with their friends and getting their physical fitness and keeping track of their own hours and submitting those hours to their advisor for their credit, and they'll have regular supervision or check-ins, but it won't be somebody always standing over them and watching them. Our kids will understand what they need to do and be focused in making sure that it gets done.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kim, I know that you have a background in social work, and I know that you have been lauded for your work in the schools that you've been about going after the kinds of policies and practices that that create the school to prison pipeline. And so, you know, today's show is entitled Dismantling the School to Prison Pipeline because of all the attention you've received in in your efforts in the different places that you've been, but particularly I think it is at the forefront of what you're doing now in Indianapolis. Tell us some of the kind of the key elements that you think need to be present in a school to actually address the reasons why children are dropping out or underachieving and moving towards that pipeline. Tell us what are the things that you're doing that actually counter students being being put into the criminal justice system.
Yep, I think the easiest and way to sum it up is I had a former teacher of mine from one of the networks that I've worked in post on my Instagram recently after seeing the article in the Hechinger about the new model that I loved working with you and for you, but I didn't love the fact that we didn't trust our kids. The reason that resonated so much with me is that it hit me, like it, similar to what I've been experiencing in the last few years as my mindsets have started to shift and change. And I heard John King speak about 2 years ago about the school to prison pipeline and nationally what the suspension rate is doing to our community and how much school and academic time is lost when we suspend students. Like that kind of started my evolution. But I think the comment from the teacher sums up for me and continues to push and motivate me, because we have worked in schools where we didn't trust our kids. And I think the reason that these schools exist is because a lot of these schools were started by people that had biases that they weren't able to acknowledge. Those biases manifested into mechanisms of control for kids and not mechanisms to teach our kids how to be self-sufficient and autonomous, to be frank, free adults. When we tell our kids where to stand on the line or make them earn a locker or have a silent lunch all the time because they talked a little too loud, we are perpetuating the system that you would see in our prisons. But it's also because we feel the need to control our kids, and that control comes from fear. And if we're scared of our kids, if we don't trust our kids, then we're not able to develop them into the whole human beings that we need them to be in order for our society to continue to grow and develop.
Well, you know, you said something that is really striking about trusting the children. And you know, there are some, and I've been to a number of schools where when you mention having children walk on the line, one really important lesson that I have for people who are going into the principalship in our principal training program is that schools are practice grounds for adulthood for children. And so we have to understand that there will be mistakes, and in some cases really bad mistakes, but that's where they need to make them versus being out in the real world, so to speak. Now, it's not to say that there's no accountability, but there needs to be structures in place that help children make those mistakes and learn from them. Tell us a little bit about when you say you're addressing the discipline problems and how you are addressing discipline in your school. With that in mind, tell us a little bit about what that looks like for you, for how children get an opportunity to learn how to walk in the hallway without having to be on a line. How do they learn how to have social time in the cafeteria without being too loud? Because actually, I've heard in some cafeterias where they've actually restricted children from talking, and there's altogether. So tell us what that actually looks like in the schools that you design.
Yeah, and I mean, in all transparency, I've participated in all of these systems and have enforced them well. So I know what the expectations are in our overly structured schools in our country, especially the ones that are existing in urban environments more so than anywhere else. I get it, and I've been a part of those systems. I think what's going to happen new is because I know what the expectations are for our students to not only flourish in those environments, I also know what they have to do in order to flourish in the boardroom or in order to flourish in a Fortune 500 company. So we want to set the base of expectations for our students. So we won't be a free-for-all. I love restorative justice. I love the concept, but our students also need to understand consequences. So we won't teach our kids that there are not consequences for their actions, but we will also expect a slow release of autonomy for them to show us that they get it and they can demonstrate it. So an example of that is at the beginning of the year for our ninth graders, will they be in a uniform? Absolutely, because I don't want to see belly shirts and sagging pants in our school, because that's not the attire that's going to get them a job that will earn them a livable wage. So will we set the baseline of expectation of what appropriate and professional dress looks like? Absolutely. But then by their senior year, should they still be in those khakis and a polo? No, because at that point, if they haven't internalized what's professional and what's not, what the time and place is for certain items is, then we failed. We haven't done our job. So our goal is that we will create a base of social norms and expectations for our students. And a lot of that will be through video. A lot of that will be through trips to visit Lilly here in Indianapolis, Cummins here in Indianapolis, some of our larger companies here, so that our kids can see what people look like when they go to work in these places. Some of our trips may just be a morning ride on the red line here, where our kids are able to identify, hey, who looks like they're going to work? Who looks like, you know, let's talk about what we see in our community, and let's talk about when and where you should be wearing certain things. So we will use, I'm just using attire as an example. Our kids have the skills to decipher what's appropriate and what's not. We just have to help facilitate that with them, so that by the time that they're in 11th and 12th grade and they're getting ready to start their dual enrollment in college or a career program, no one has to tell them what to wear. They understand what they need to do, and they're focused in making sure that they do it.
Makes sense to me. So shifting gears just a little bit, I, you know, as you talked about some of the things that you expect from your students, I just, I know that a number of people have expressed some difficulty attracting the kinds of teachers that also flourish in those environments. What do you look for in a teacher that you think would be a good example of who you need in your schools and to fulfill the vision you have towards social justice, restorative discipline policies? What does that teacher look like?
Yep. I think the teacher, and I think the teacher that we're needing is someone who can identify with our kids, someone who trusts our students. And that's not to say that everybody that comes in won't come in with biases, but they're willing to be self-aware and acknowledge them enough to say, hey, I need to grow and I need to develop this. So we want a diverse teaching staff. So we want anybody who wants to trust and show and display that every day with our students to be a part of our team. We also need flexible people who are passionate about development, because all of our teachers are expected to be advisors, which means they'll get 15 or 20 kids that'll be their own that they need to not only see through high school, but into their college or career or path of choice. So we want someone who's willing to go that extra mile with our students and not just be their teacher in the classroom, but be the support system that some of our kids may need in order to truly realize their dreams. So dedication, loyalty, and a little bit of flexibility, I think, are some key characteristics that we're looking for in our teacher. We also need people that are knowledgeable in their subject matter. Academic excellence is a non-negotiable for me. So all of our teachers are going to be expected to ensure that our students are excelling academically. Acceleration is one of our core pillars. So we need our students to finish their high school requirements by the end of their sophomore year, which means that some of our kids may have extra time on task, and we need teachers that are willing to support that as well.
Is it difficult, or have you found it difficult to recruit the teachers you need?
I haven't. What I'm really excited about is we already have a strong pool. We're just getting started in our teacher recruitment strategy, and we are already getting a lot of traction from teachers here in the community that are really excited about our model and excited about the fact that we're doing something different.
I see. And so, Kim, you know, you have been in a number of challenging contexts. So I know you've served as a school leader in Chicago, in DC area, and now you're in Indianapolis. And so I'm sure our listeners would love to hear what is your approach to getting buy-in in the various communities you've been in? Because for all practical purposes, the places that where you have been, people have not been entirely successful, and they have been in schools and in communities where the schools have not been not been successful. So, how do you get buy-in in order to do and accomplish the things that you've managed to accomplish?
It starts with the parents. I fundamentally, again, back to the trust, I trust and believe that all of our parents want what's best for their students. All of our parents have not, because of a systematic oppression, been given the tools that they need in order to help their child be their best selves. So one of the things that I would say I would identify as the key factor to my ability to impact the communities that I've been had the opportunity to serve is that our parents have been so supportive of the work that we do. Our parents trust me with the care of their child, and I trust them that they're also going to support what we need at home. And that partnership has been key to the couple hundred kids that I graduated in my first high school and the couple hundred kids that I finished the middle school in D.C. with. I think a lot of that, a lot of the success of those students was derived from a trusting relationship between school and home.
Sure, sure. If you're just joining us, we have with us today Ms. Kimberly Neal, who is the founder of Believe Schools in Indianapolis, Indiana, scheduled to open next year. If there are callers, listeners that are out there that want to call in, ask you to do so at 657-383-1481. Again, 657-383-1481. We'll take a few calls. We do have someone who has been holding, called in a little earlier from South Carolina, where we have seen. South Carolina, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yes, sir, I'm here.
Okay, please, do you have a question or a comment for Ms. Neal?
Yes, I do. It's going to be a comment. I'm going to kind of round it off with a question because I was at this place. It was another blog talk show that was on, and, you know, they were speaking about, you know, different dynamics concerning Africans in America. And I guess in the case of the school-to-prison pipeline, it's specifically speaking about black and brown kids. And in normal cases, specifically black kids, the underprivileged kids, and actually, just to make it more clear, PBS has a special, and I would encourage kids to look at this documented educational view of what we're talking about or what is being spoken about here, but it's actually called Slavery by Another Name. And basically talking about the dynamics of America, and this is why it is very important for us as parents to take it a step further and to teach our children, you know, deem things that are necessary because there are things that the school just won't teach your children that should be important for their, you know, for their growth. But Slavery by Another Name is actually a documented experience talking about how slavery was, quote-unquote, abolished and then you had the new prison system. And in that, mm-hmm. there were plenty of black people that were the ones thrown in jail. In a lot of cases, for no reason. I have one personal experience. I have a young man. He was a great athlete going to the pros in Georgia Southern. His name is Shai Wirtz. Come from a good family, things of that nature. But the police stopped this young man, and it's something that has gone viral. TMZ, The Breakfast Club, everybody is now on this, but it happened here in South Carolina. But the police jumped all over that young man, basically wanted to criminalize him, as the system does, and a lot of times they criminalize you and try you dead on the street and make you wrong before you even have a fair due process within the system. So looking at this issue where he was wronged, they said they found some cocaine, something that they thought was cocaine. They tested it, but it actually was bird poop. The test on the scene, they were wronging him, saying that it was cocaine, saying that, you know, basically trying to ruin his career, but it came back to be bird poop. And a lot of times, in a lot of these cases, you know, not all times the black boy or the black kid will have a voice to say, well, hey, I'm not wrong. You know, they mm-hmm. there are cases where they could get thrown in jail. The Kwali Browder story, young 16-year-old boy that got thrown in jail for 3 years for something that he didn't even do. You understand?
Sure.
And this
sure.
is the nature of this system. And I think it is something very important. And my question, I'm sorry for being so long-winded, but my mm-hmm. question is, are we simply looking at the educational part of the system that in which, you know, whatever is doing wrong to us, or is there a bigger picture? And is that bigger picture somewhat tied into, I'm going to say, white nationalism, you mm-hmm. know, where this system protects the white terrorists, the white domestic terrorists, right? We do know that Dylan
yeah.
Roof, he got taken to Burger King after he went in to kill 9 Christian people, right?
Yeah.
But an unarmed black boy for doing Mike Brown. He got
sure.
shot dead
yeah.
in the street, left cold. You know, my Eric
and
Gardner
from,
got choked to death
yeah.
for selling
yeah,
cigarettes.
I'm from St. Louis, so the Mike Brown case definitely resonates with me more than a lot of people. Because
yes,
my family
ma'am.
I grew up down the street from there with my family. My response to that is a leader who I respect greatly, Kaya Henderson, the former chancellor of DC Public Schools, came and spoke to us when I was doing a program, and she said, "I can fix education. I can impact education." She didn't say fix, impact educational outcomes, but I can't fix a broken system. And in a lot of our cities, and we were specifically speaking about D.C., a woman can't even deliver a baby because there aren't hospitals that are equipped for that in some of our communities. So I think mm-hmm. that speaks to what you're speaking of, is that there are systematic issues in our country that education can't fix.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't pretend to have a silver bullet that's going to change police brutality and some of the other things that you're touching upon. But what we can do is make sure that our kids are educated and equipped to deal with whatever life throws at them.
Sure. And thank you for that. And, you know, I think it's a good segue into my next question was, you know, what else is being done in terms of partnerships? I know there have been some other articles that have been written about some of the work that you had done in forming partnerships with local law enforcement and other community agencies to address this issue. Tell us a little bit about the other kind of reaching out beyond the schoolhouse walls to influence others to be a part of the same mission that you are. Tell us a little bit about that work you're doing.
Yep. So the one I can speak to the most is the one I'm closest to, which is the foster care system. So I am a CASA advocate here in Indianapolis, and Indiana, due to the drug epidemic, has more children that are in need of services than most other states in our country. And in response to that, and hearing those statistics when I moved here, I was always passionate about it, something I've gotten involved in. I am actively working to understand how our kids are ending up in the system, and then working with some of the local community leaders about how we can address that. There's a faith-based organization here that's doing a lot of work around that, most recently around the fact that they were trying to criminalize children as young as 12 and 13 years old. That mm-hmm. bill was defeated. I was active with that, making sure that that bill got defeated, and went to as many community events as I was able to address that issue. But that's one bill that highlights the fact that we are living in a broken system, and we've got to work in totality with other community organizations to make sure we're addressing all of the issues and not just the achievement gaps.
Sure. And a lot of this, and this is tied into the question I had about you having the teachers that with the appropriate attitude and disposition to do this work.
Yes.
Just as an example, I you know, what I'm talking about is that you can't have people working in these environments that are afraid of children and are afraid of these children that are that come to us in the schools where we need them most, and but they are further alienated in the schools, and the parents are alienated a lot of times when they come in. And so you got to have the teachers with the right attitudes and dispositions. I think about a client of mine once was telling me about a situation in their school system where a kindergarten child, a young Black boy, the teacher and the principal called the police on a kindergarten boy for pulling down his pants. And and I immediately, when I heard that, and if you, whether sometimes, you know, you don't necessarily have to have children. I have four myself, but if you have children, you know that that's what they do at that age. And so I was just thinking, like, who is this person who is in education, who doesn't understand that children, if it itches, they're going to scratch it no matter where it is. And if they're too hot, mm-hmm. they're going to take it off at that age. And that's what they're there to learn. But to actually call the police because the child pulled down his pants, and it's just what they do at that age. And I just, it disturbed me so. And I was just saying that these are not the people we need in our schools working with our children. So that piece was very important for me.
And that's Perkins, that resonates a ton with me. We talk a lot, especially here in my current landscape in Indianapolis, about representation mattering. So the fact that our kids need to not only have people that are not afraid of them, but and respect and love them, but they also need to see people that look like them. So there's somewhat of a national push right now to increase the people of color that are in our industry. However, in the meantime, we have got to acknowledge that there are lots of good teachers out there of color, and we've got to figure out how to recruit them and make sure that they are being developed and that they are getting all of the training and skills to be as effective as they can be with our community, because we are the ones that we're waiting on. You know, we don't need any other people that have to come into our community. We can do it. We just need the system to work in our favor in order for everybody to blossom.
Absolutely. Well, Kim, thank you so much. I just really want to encourage you and to continue to be on this path that you're on. You know, a lot of people don't understand that it takes a lot of sacrifice to do what you do and be engaged in turnaround school work for children and families in these communities. And so I applaud you. You've been nationally recognized for the work that you're doing. And so I also want to add to that, and I'm sure people will look and see look at the work that you're doing as an example of the kinds of things we should be doing for children all over the country. So thank you for joining us today. And thanks so much to the listeners out there who tuned in this month. We are excited for you, Kim, and we just want you to continue to do great things for children and families. So to my listeners, until next time, go well, stay well.
Thanks, everybody.